Welcome to the NOLA Drink Show. Join us as we explore the world of drink, food, and culture in New Orleans and beyond. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody. Hey, welcome to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks, friends, for listening in this week. I do appreciate it. As always, had a little bit of a week off last week for Thanksgiving, if you're listening on the radio here in New Orleans, of course, or if you're listening to the podcast somewhere in the United States. Big holiday, a lot of gluttonous activity, hopefully spending some time reflecting and giving thanks. So we were off, yes, with a new show last week, and we are back with a new show this week. And now what it means that we are past Thanksgiving, I am comfortable enough to tell you happy holidays. So happy holidays to you there, friends out there listening to the NOLA Drinks Show. I wish you and yours the best during this holiday season. I'm never comfortable talking about it until Thanksgiving, all right? I don't like seeing Christmas decorations before Halloween. I don't really like seeing Christmas decorations before Thanksgiving. You can call me a curmudgeon. You can say, bah humbug, I sound like a Scrooge. Fair enough, I'm just generally not ready. I don't think that the holiday season lasts 3 months. Okay, let's just go with a few weeks. There's my little soapbox for you. We got a really good show coming up for you this week because it does sort of relate to the holidays. We are over at our friend's place, Latitude 29, the fine tiki bar established by Jeff Beachbum Berry and his wife, Aneen. I think they're about 5 years ago or so, thereabouts. And they do a program every year that Jeff started in concert, also with our friends at Cocktail Kingdom up there in New York. It's a series of pop-up bars started kind of with Jeff, but it's called Sippin' Santa. So it's holiday-inspired tiki cocktails with all kinds of festive cheer going on, both in flavor and presentation of the drinks. Of course, they do it at Latitude 29 and numerous other bars around the country and even Canada now, so you can find it in different places. We talk about how you can connect with it because it might be happening in your town or a neighboring town. But we're joined by Jeff Beachbum Berry and Brad Smith, and Brad is the general manager and head bartender there at Latitude 29. Good guy, friend of mine. First time he joined us on the show. Of course, Jeff has been on quite a bit, but we talk a little bit about Sippin' Santa. We sample some of the cocktails. We talk about some of the flavors and how a lot of the tiki palate really does kind of lend itself very well to holiday cocktails, just because we talk about things like allspice dram and some of these things that we typically find in tiki cocktails, and they have that kind of holiday flavor to them as well. So that's why these drinks really work. It's a lot of fun there. And then we also, if you're listening on the radio, I do encourage you to get the podcast, as we always do. You can find it on your favorite podcast platform. Just search for the NOLA Drinks Show or simply NOLA Drinks. We're on all the major podcast networks there. Or you can just simply go to our website, noladrinks.com, and you can find links to those podcast platforms or get each episode directly from our site, download it or stream it, whatever you like. But I encourage you to do that because it's a very interesting conversation that we have in the podcast only portion, Another Shot with NOLA Drinks, where we talk about the Planner's Punch. And if you're listening to the show, the last new show that we did going back a couple weeks ago, we were at the Sazerac House. One of the drinks that they kindly poured for us that we sampled and they feature there is the Planter's Punch. And we talked then a little bit about sort of, to a degree, the history, but kind of what makes a Planter's Punch. And I think I made the remark that it's one of the murkiest cocktails. I don't mean that from a can you see through it, translucent kind of way. What I mean by that is that the history of it or the story of it is a little bit hazy, but never fear, because our good friend Jeff Beachbum Berry, who is one of the foremost cocktail historians in the world, had a lot of answers to that question. And we discussed just what is a Planner's Punch, where it comes from, its long and interesting history, and kind of sort of what we see with it today. And then we talk about allspice a little bit too, and allspice dram, which is sort of a key liqueur in a lot of tiki drinks. And that's also a very interesting conversation that you're not going to want to miss. So go get the podcast. Going to have some good shows, friends, coming up for you in the coming weeks. One of them that we're trying to put together is with our friends at the Historic New Orleans Collection. And as you know, we've done some interesting stuff there. We had Dr. Jessica Harris on, who is a specialist in a culinary history and the African diaspora. Go back and check out that show. She's a very fascinating woman, and that was a fascinating conversation about the influences of the African diaspora on how we eat, really in the Western Hemisphere, in the United States, and certainly here in New Orleans. Easy to find that one on our website, too. But another interesting exhibit that just opened up at the Historic New Orleans Collection opened up on the 22nd of November and runs through March 8th of next year, 2020. And this is at their 520 Royal Street facility. It's called Crescent City Sport, Stories of Courage and Change. And, you know, if you're from the area and you're listening to the show locally, you know, we're big on the Saints and we're big on sports here. I think everybody knows that. And if you're listening outside the area, certainly you know our love affair for the New Orleans Saints. And it's really a unique situation, I think, in how it manifests what we see, our passion for the team, how it cuts across demographic lines and all kinds of different things. But the history of sport in New Orleans really, really, I mean, of course, goes back since the establishment of the city, I'm sure. But since the end of the Civil War, sports really played a vital role sometimes the slow paced, as they say at the Historic New Orleans Collection in their description, the reluctant is the word that they use, progress toward gender equality and racial inclusivity. And that's a central part of this exhibit. But numerous sports have had numerous interesting stories and histories here in New Orleans, and we hope to do a show on that pretty quick. So be on the lookout for that. Friends, we're going to take a brief break here on the NOLA Drink Show, and then we're going to be back over at Latitude 29 talking with Jeff Beachbum, Barry, and Brad Smith, sipping Santa. Oh, yeah. Happy holidays. Come on.
Mama, mama, would you like to join your sonny? I am over here, happy in the mother country. Darling, for the Christmas, your son will be really jumping. Listen to the chorus of what we will all be singing.
Drink a rum and a bunch of grandma, drink a rum.
It's Christmas morning.
Drink a rum and a bunch.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for listening into the NOLA Drink Show. Friends, as always, and as you know, we are here at Latitude 29 in the French Quarter, and we're talking about holiday cocktails, sipping Santa, and all that good stuff we're going to get into. We are sitting here with Jeff Beachbum Barry. Jeff, welcome back to the show.
Aloha. Happy to be back.
Thanks, buddy. I think you may have set the record for most guest appearances on the NOLA Drink Show at this point.
That is my goal in life.
It is a dubious honor. Well, you have achieved your aim high, man.
Aim high. Dream big.
Dream big. You were in the running with Gustings, I think. So, but
Gustings can't run anymore, so I'm going to win that
race.
Okay,
you're definitely going to win that. That race. We're also joined for the first time by Brad Smith, who's the GM here at Latitude. How you doing, man?
Hey, good. Good to be here.
Good, man. Good to have you on the show finally. Yeah. You've seen us do it in your midst more than
sure.
once, but first time we got you on.
Yeah, it's an honor and a privilege, and happy to be here to talk about it.
He hasn't been on before. He's saying it's an honor and a privilege.
Well, Jeff. I guess we'll sort it out of it.
He'll know what it really is.
You'll feel differently very soon, exactly. Well, actually, you know what, Brad, since you've not been on before, you're the GM here. Let me start with you. Tell us a little bit about your background, man. Where'd you come from, and how'd you end up working with this nefarious character?
Oh, my goodness. So I'm a career bartender. I've been in the service industry since I was 13. Moved to New Orleans about 7 or 8 years ago. My wife's whole family's down here, and I saw that Beach Bum was going to open a tiki bar, and I had this wild hair up my butt that I was going to hit that guy up and see if he would give me a job. And sure enough, he did. So it just worked out, man. And here we are 5 years later, and
yeah,
it's going great.
And you started out behind the bar, right?
Yes. I came in specifically saying, I don't want any responsibility. Just let me put booze in a cup, sir. And he kindly agreed.
Nice.
And that lasted for maybe about a month or two.
We kept twisting his arm, then we twisted his other arm, then we grabbed his neck and shook him until he said, okay, I'll step up.
And here we are. So GM and head bartender, and
Yeah, nice.
It's been good, man.
Awesome, awesome. Did you work prior? You said you lifelong bartender for the most part. Had you worked like in specialty cocktails, craft cocktails?
Prior? Yeah. So before this, I ran a joint in the Bywater called Maurepas Foods, where we're kind of notorious. We did the farm to table sort of cocktail thing before it was really popular. We got a lot of notoriety for it. We got highly experimental with some of our things, and I think that's when Bum first came in with Wayne Curtis. And
you popped into Maurepas to check it out.
Well, actually, the first time was with Todd Price, and he was interviewing me for the Times-Picayune back when that was still a thing. And And he said, let's go to Moorpoint. I said, what's Moorpoint? He goes, it's a really nice place to go for lunch. He said, okay. So we went there, and there was a cocktail list. And I looked at the cocktail list, and there were things on there, one drink in particular called the Gent and the Jackass, and it had smoked paprika syrup in it. And that was something I've been trying to work into a drink literally for years and never could figure it out. And I was like, oh, okay, I'll order that. And I did, and it was delicious. And then I ordered another drink, the Piloncillo Daiquiri, or Bywater Daiquiri.
Bywater Daiquiri, yeah, with the mango.
Bywater Daiquiri with Piloncillo. I noticed that Piloncillo in it, which is a hard, like a rock-hard Mexican sugar that comes in, like, really impossible to chip at cones. And that's another thing I'd never been able to get work. So, you know, who's behind this list? And then Brad came over and introduced himself, and it's like, I bow. You know, this is awesome. <You know? laughs>
So it,
and that's when we first met.
Okay.
And, you know, I'd been back again with Wayne Curtis, and we got to know each other just a little bit better. It was always a very busy bar, you know.
True.
Like,
But
Brad always came over and made some time for us. And then I was thrilled when he said that he wanted to work for us and just wanted a 10 bar. And my first thing was, yeah, but you make great drinks. You should be heading your own program. Says, yeah, I'm over that for the time being. And now, of course, he's making great drinks for us, and we're very happy about it. He's creating original cocktails for us.
Well, and I was going to actually ask you that, Jeff, because we've touched on that a little bit before. When you come here to Latitude 29, you can certainly expect to find the classic tiki cocktails. And I'll ask people to reference shows that we've done before where we talk about what all that means. But your bartenders, Brad included, you know, spearheading that, people are coming up with, there's original cocktails you're finding on the menu here. Right?
Sure.
Well, that was always the brief for us, because if we had opened in 2009, before this whole tiki drink renaissance took off, basically occasioned by my books, if I may toot my own conch shell, I would have served nothing.
Toot your own conch shell?
I did. Yeah. We're going to save more details on that for the podcast section.
Okay.
That's sound bite gold, Brad.
Perfect.
We won't get into that here on public airwaves. But if I had opened in 2009, I would have served nothing but the classics. I would have served Don the Beachcomber drinks and Trader Vic's drinks because they're amazing. They were 70 years ahead of their time. They were craft cocktails before that term existed. But by the time we opened in 2014, there were all kinds of places all over the country that were already serving these drinks. They'd been rediscovered, you know, through my books, basically.
Sure, right.
So in order to separate myself from the pack, I made the menu about maybe half and half, like half of my originals, which you could not get at any other bar, so that people had a reason to come here as opposed to other new craft cocktail tiki bars, and half the classics that we just could not put on a menu because we love them so much, and because people expect to see a zombie in a Mai Tai on the menu. So the first year was basically 100% my drinks, but by the second year, I didn't want our bartenders just to be a pair of hands executing a menu that they had no input into, but that's the way it was in the first year until I got to know everybody and saw what their basic strengths were. And we started doing a happy hour. And that was a place for our bar staff to get creative, and not just to make my drinks or the classics, but to invent their own cocktails and to put their own spin on things. And what I quickly found was that we had some very, very talented mixologists, and that's not a word that I am ashamed of. I think it's a great word. You know, we had some very talented mixologists right here behind our bar, and they were doing amazing drinks, world-class drinks. If you'd entered them in cocktail competitions, they would have won. And it was like time for me to lighten up a little bit and go, okay, you know, let's start putting some of these things on. And the only person who got their drinks on the first menu that wasn't just me was Brad. You know, there were certain weaknesses I have. I'm not good at stirred drinks. I'm better at shaken and blended, you know, citrus rum things. And that a stirred tiki drink was a little bit of a stress for me, and Brad just like knocked out, you know, one which is still on our menu 3 years later.
Which one is that, Brad?
South Sea Center. Yeah.
The South Sea Center.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Tell us about that drink.
So it's interesting. We You know, coconut rum is a much maligned spirit when it comes to all things tiki. People pretty much think about like Malibu and just that candied coconut. And it was one of the original guys here, Aaron Doherty, who came up with the idea of taking coconut water and making a reduction and putting that into a silver Spanish style rum and making a true coconut rum.
Okay.
So it's that. It's really malty. It's really... I mean, it's like nothing you've ever had before. And so we've had a couple different incarnations of that, but it's very much like a malty coconut. There's a pistachio. There's, you know, bitters blend. I don't want to give away too much.
Sure,
but,
sure. Yeah,
some Japanese whiskey in there, too. It's a really great stir.
Oh, I'm really curious.
Thank you. The Japanese whiskey. Now I know exactly what drink you're talking about.
It's just a non-citrus drink. I'm not good at coming up with non-citrus. That's kind of my wheelhouse, you know, so... Mm-hmm. So Brad killed that, and then we had Cocktail Kingdom did the coconut mug for us, the Latitude 29 coconut mug. Yeah. It's like, what goes in that? And I already had a coconut drink on the menu, you know, the Kia Colada. And it's like Brad came up with a 21st century take on the Banana Banshee called the Banshee, which has all kinds of cool stuff in it that we cannot yet divulge. So that was the second drink
when
he got on the menu.
When you say yet, does that mean it's forthcoming at some point? Or?
I never say never.
Okay, right. Yeah.
If you come and sit at the bar and pay attention, you might be able to pick up.
You might be able to reverse engineer some
stuff.
Of it.
Okay,
but
got it.
For the most part, it's like a banana milkshake.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then there was another one, which was like I had an idea for a drink that I could never get to work. I wanted to do a drink with Irish whiskey and either mezcal and tequila because I wanted to call a drink Sean and Juan. That's a great name. I want a drink called Sean and Juan. And I could never get it to work. I messed around with it. And finally, I told Brad that. And the next day, not even 24 hours, it's more like 18 hours later, he came up with a tequila, guava, a little bit of Benedictine and lemon. And it's like, okay, done, on the menu. You know, so things like that are working out. And I found that... You know, in my old age, you know, I'm tired and lazy and a kind of a one-trick pony. And Brad can come up with stuff like at the drop of a hat. And that's why I wear a hat, actually. So when I drop it, Brad comes up with a new drink.
Yeah, awesome.
It works out really well for everybody.
So Bum's being entirely too modest. I think when you take a look at our menu and you look at, you know, it's 50-50 classics versus originals. But he kind of cracked the code as far as... How do you make a tiki drink? Like, how did Don and Vic put these drinks together? And there is a code to it. He cracked it. All I'm doing is following the code that he cracked. Mm-hmm. That's it. Mm-hmm. You can take and you can put citrus, you can put sugar, you put it into the right spot. You can do guava, lemon, passion, whatever it happens to be. But you plug it into the formula and it works. It just works. And he cracked it. He's being very modest because all of our original drinks are fantastic. And I truly, truly believe that both Don and Vic would be shocked by how good our original drinks are.
Proud and carrying that on.
Yes,
right?
and they follow the pattern and they follow what they were trying to do. And,
in their footsteps.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to ask you guys to divulge this, of course, but is it kind of along the thinking, I'm going to get this totally wrong, where it's the... Four parts this, three parts this, two parts this, one part that. You know, that kind of classic cocktail
formula. It's more like the basic old 200-year-old Jamaican poem: one of sour, two of sweet, three of strong, four of weak. For a planner's punch.
Thank you. Yes.
It's basically not those ratios. It's not a very good ratio, actually. It's too weak and it's too sweet. But basically, sweet, sour, strong, and weak, and that's always been my thing. And I've been trying to break out of that more and more because I want to. You know, not just be that one trick pony, but
don't overthink it.
Works. You know? Yeah. Sour, it sweet, it strong, works. And you know, sometimes you can leave out the weak. You know, it's like tiki is not for the weak.
Right.
You know.
For the strong. Yeah.
It's for the strong.
This will be the time for the pirate R, Brad. Well, let's do this, you guys. Let's take a little break here on the show, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about the Sip and Santa program, which just kicked off yesterday for us, but it'll be about a week ago when you all are hearing this. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. Come on back. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian D. is here with you. Thanks for listening in, as always, friends. I will now say it because it's after Thanksgiving and I'm comfortable. When you're hearing this, I'm comfortable saying happy holidays. So Jeff Beachbump, Barry, Brad Smith, happy holidays.
Yes. Back at you.
Happy holidays.
Thank you. I get a little upset when we're talking about Christmas before Halloween. So I have to hang on for a little while before I will embrace it.
Obviously, you're not in retail.
I am definitely not in retail. Thank God. I haven't heard too many Christmas songs either, Jeff, to this point, because then they just run through your head right over and over and over again. Well, speaking of the holidays, how was that for a really smooth and natural segue? We're talking about the Sip and Santa program here.
Touché. Which,
thank you. That's why I get paid the big bucks, Jeff.
The big buck?
The big buck, exactly. I'm a dollar heir, as we were talking about. Yes. Got O. Washington. So we're talking about the Sip and Santa program, which is pretty neat. We actually talked about it a little bit last year, but holiday tiki cocktails. Why don't you tell us, I'll just tee it up that way. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what it is and how it works and how you can find it here and elsewhere, I think, right?
Yeah, this was our fourth year doing it. It's basically a Christmas / tiki pop-up bar. And the idea originally was you take a tiki bar, which already has over-the-top decor, and suggest a tropical holiday. And then you take Christmas decor, your Christmas holiday, and you get two vacations in one, basically. You just like sort of collide the two together, sort of like a Santa's sled colliding with a Hawaiian outrigger canoe and all that. Or as Brad described it before, Christmas throwing up all over your tiki bar. Mm. So it's two totally over-the-top decor elements where you just go crazy with the Christmas decorations on top of the crazy tiki decorations. Then you have music, sort of a mashup, which is like exotica music crossed with surf Christmas music and all that. Mm-hmm. And then, most importantly, you have a mashup of tiki and Christmas-themed cocktails. And when you talk about Christmas-themed cocktails, you're talking about holiday aromas and spices that people are familiar with, like clove, nutmeg, cinnamon, a little cranberry, things like that. And fortunately enough, those are also spice elements in traditional tiki drinks. So it's a kind of a natural way to have the two things combine into the glass in like Christmas-themed tiki mugs, which is like the last thing. And I'll let Brad talk some more about the mixology behind what we're doing here with the mashup of the drinks.
Well, and what Jeff just said, Brad, is that I think that people might think, whoa, tiki Christmas cocktail is kind of a marriage of strange bedfellows. But for reasons that Jeff laid out, a lot of the spices in particular, that spice palette, pretty cross-fertilization there.
I think it all works surprisingly well, especially with things like allspice. I mean, allspice is a staple of tiki cocktails. Mm-hmm. But it's, in a way, it's taking those spice elements, which are more, they sit more in the background of a lot of tiki drinks, and moving them to the foreground so that you're featuring the nutmeg and you're featuring the cinnamon and the allspice and things like applejack. Mm-hmm. So it's keeping the balance, but just switching up the emphasis of the ingredient.
So maybe bringing in like applejack in place of a whiskey slot or something like that.
So like we did a bowl this year for the first time, and it's cinnamon, applejack, dark rum, but
maple.
Yeah. But it sits heavier. It's almost, if you could somehow have a tiki drink that embodied Wisconsin,
okay,
this is what we've got. I mean, being born and raised in Wisconsin, I can speak intimately about that. But yeah, it's just sort of keeping the balance, but switching up the way that you approach it, and that gets you kind of a holiday tiki drink.
Yeah, I like it. And it's interesting, you guys, because I think we're tasting a few of these, and we'll get into that in a second. But they're not they're flavor forward in a way that you just described, Brad. But we're not talking about, in most instances, super heavy, viscous kind of drinks. They still have that tiki characteristic of having acid going on and other things.
Yeah, like not at all heavy. I mean, there's one drink that Brad did, the tequila Christmas drink, Papa Noel, which is the opposite of that. It's very, it's not thin, but it's more like astringent, sort of a tequila, apricot, lime thing. The Christmas comes in with a little cardamom bitters, but if you want a heavy Christmas drink, we certainly have one. We've got things like the Kris Kringle Colada, which Brad can talk about some more. Sure. So we've got heavy body drinks. We have lighter more easy, well, even the more Donna Victor.
I mean, for me, growing up in Wisconsin and being in the bar industry for so long, like a Tom and Jerry is the quintessential holiday cocktail.
Will you tell people what that is, just so they don't know?
Tom and Jerry is an egg batter that traditionally is made with brandy, at least where I come from. It's a hot drink. It's like a boozy hot eggnog. Mm-hmm. So that is, you can go to any grocery store in Wisconsin and buy a quart of pre-made Tom and Jerry batter.
Oh, really?
Yes. Like, okay. This is a thing. This is definitely a thing.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. Everybody drinks Tom and Jerry's. So to be able to do it and do it in a way that is rum-based and has the tiki flavors, and we incorporate a little saffron, we incorporate some agricole rum, we incorporate some dark Jamaican rum, but still pay homage to, which is my childhood, my roots, which is the Tom and Jerry.
Tom and Jerry. Yeah. Where did that drink come from? You guys, do you know?
Thomas and Jeremiah, I believe it was Jerry Thomas in 1862 had it in his first bar guide. Okay. And I, this is more a question for a true historian like David Wondrous, and not just a drunk like me. But I think it first appeared in that book, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Wondrous. And it had a huge post-war popularity after World War II.
Yeah.
Is when it really became a thing. You know, and I don't know quite how that happened, but it was definitely a 19th century drink.
I think because it's delicious.
Well, yeah, because it tastes good.
There you go.
What is that, Occam's razor? Man. The simplest explanation is the
really, really good.
We don't need a prosaic David Wondrous response to know the answer to that question.
This just tastes good, all right? Yeah.
Case closed. Well, so you guys, with the Sip and Santa program then, I mean, obviously we can you can get it here at Latitude 29.
Yes.
About 2 minutes, we're going to take another break, you guys. But this is something that is also grown, hasn't it? And you can
it
find
has,
the program
yeah.
elsewhere.
It started out being like one bar, Boilermaker in New York. Greg Bohm from Cocktail Kingdom started it. And it was just Christmas-themed pop-up over there. And then he got us involved. And after the second or third year, he said, well, why don't you guys just do all the drinks? Because more and more people are signing on, and we like your drinks. Last year, it grew to 10 bars that were across the country doing the Sip and Santa pop-up, which was our drink menu that Cocktail Kingdom printed up for them, and all of the cool Christmas tiki mugs that Cocktail Kingdom made, and decor that you could use from them, and et cetera, et cetera. And now, this year, it's grown from 10 to 27. So coast to coast, north, south, east, west, and then Canada, Calgary, and I believe Toronto are two Canadian cities that have Sip and Santa pop-ups, and it's all these Latitude 29 recipes. Mm-hmm. So everywhere you go, you're gonna get Brad's drinks in these cool Cocktail Kingdom mugs and all that. It's been pretty exciting to watch it grow, actually.
It's pretty neat. Yeah. I'm going to ask you some questions about that, you guys, in a second when we come back. Well, let me ask you this one real quick before we take a break. So because we know sort of the nature, and again, I'll ask people to reference previous shows that we've done, Jeff, about part of the tiki culture is there is a bit of secrecy, we'll say, behind some of the drinks and how you find out what's in them and so on and all the research you've done. How does that work then? Do you guys kind of, or is anything prefabricated or prepackaged for these bars, or do they sign an NDA, or are we just doing stuff that doesn't need that secrecy?
Well, no, there is a veil of secrecy. These are industrial trade secrets. People pay money to opt into the franchise.
Got it.
So these recipes are exclusive to that franchise. You know, you don't want somebody who hasn't paid Cocktail Kingdom the fee to go and serve these drinks and do a rogue pop-up. Mm-hmm. So there are plenty of rogue pop-ups, but they don't have our recipes. They have to do their own. But everybody who participates gets a very, very detailed cocktail manual, which talks about making all of these complex compound syrups and all these batters and how to prep and batch and do all the stuff to just minimize the pain of preparation for this, because these are very elaborate cocktails, yeah. And Cocktail Kingdom is very good about only choosing bars that they think can execute this menu. Like, you know, if you're not on their radar as a cocktail bar that knows what they're doing, they won't consider you for Sip and Safari.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. Or Sip and Santa.
Sip and Santa. Well, let's do this, you guys. Let's take a little break. We're going to come back, talk a little bit more about Sip and Santa, and then we can let you talk about Sip and Safari, too, because people need to know where they can buy the book, right?
So why not?
Why not? Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the Old Drink Show. Come on. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. We are at Latitude 29 chatting with Brad Smith, general manager, head bartender, and Maynard G. Krebs, otherwise known as Jeff Beach Bunbury, proprietor and cocktail historian, tiki historian. Sorry, friends. As you know, when we do this show, the sidebars during between segments are, it's gold. It's just comedy gold. We'll leave it at that. So you guys were talking about Sippin' Santa here, and it's a fun program. We'll talk about a couple more of the drinks, and then we're going to let people know where they can come experience it for themselves. Let's talk about the flip that I'm having right here. Brad?
Let's talk about it.
What can you divulge about the flip, Brad?
What can I tell you about it?
Why don't we tell people, let's start with what is a flip. That would probably be helpful.
So flip is a cocktail with a whole egg. When you, like, the intention is to aerate the cocktail to a point, the egg traps oxygen in the drink and makes it really light and fluffy. Like a really old school classic sort of drink. We did it with a ginger infused Amaro, and I guess that's probably about all I can really divulge for the most part. But the idea is it's kind of like a eggnog.
Like a cold, you know? And it's a cold, creamy,
yes.
Creamy.
Yeah. Right.
It's a bourbon-based drink, but, too.
Okay. To sort of capture the idea of eggnog, you know, being probably one of the more traditional holiday drinks, you know. Mm-hmm.
Do you have flips on the menu in other instances from time to time?
We do not.
Pretty much
it's a Christmas kind of thing. Yeah. Wintry drink.
Because of the texture, right?
And yeah.
That sort of thing. It's call it a pain in the butt would be fair.
And again, it was a name thing. It's like, we want a drink called the Festivus Flip. Yeah. And it's like, alliteration is all, so Brad had to come up with one. And yeah. It's like...
Yes, there you go with the Festivus flip. And as we discussed, Jeff, before we went on the air, it is now time for the feats of strength.
Yes, and the airing of the grievances will be the podcast.
The podcast only thing, because Brad can swear and air whatever grievances he would like to air.
I've got the poll now. I have a lot of problems with you people, and you're going to hear about it.
You're going to hear about it. Notice how he just said the flip is a pain in the butt. He can air that grievance in a much stronger way during the podcast only portion. Well, what about this one, you guys? Have we talked about that one yet?
The Shaka Kaliki Maka was trying to capture a Christmas tree in a cocktail. It's really all it is. I mean, you have the gin, you have juniper, you have cranberry, you have lime. Like, it truly was. I mean, that was it. Trying to just put a Christmas tree into a drink, and we've had a couple different variations of that. This year we switched it up, adding our falernum. The Latitude 29 Falernum.
You guys do a house-made Falernum?
Yeah, we have a gentleman in Brooklyn. His company's called Orgeat Works.
Okay.
He does our Orgeat and our Falernum, but it's Jeff's recipe. It's the Latitude 29 special blend, and it's that drink's... I think it's good. I think it tastes like Christmas.
Yeah, it's the guy's name is Tiki Adam, a.k.a. Adam Colasar, yeah. And he actually came to us before we opened and says, hey... I want to do your Orgeat and Falernum. And I said, hey, that's great, because I don't want to make Orgeat and Falernum. You know, it's like, I don't want to blanch almonds and squeeze them through cheesecloth and do all this other complicated stuff. Right. And that's his bag, and he does it. And he did, you know, he did a great job.
It's great.
Yeah. So it is actually commercially available, Amazon.com or OrgeatWorks.com.
Oh, okay, cool.
Latitude 29 Formula Falernum.
No alcohol in it then, right?
Correct.
No, it's just strictly a syrup.
Just strictly a syrup. Yeah. That's very interesting. Wow, very cool. Okay. Is there any other ones that we haven't covered yet, you guys, that we want to touch on?
Well, one of my favorites is the Christmas Eve of Destruction, which is another Brad drink. You probably should talk about it.
Well, so as a young bartender, I would watch the sous chef of the first place I worked at, and he would get a beer and a shot every time he'd get done with work, and he would shoot Grand Marnier.
Oh, okay, not Jameson. Okay,
nope. It was Grand Marnier. I didn't know what it was. Didn't know anything about any of these like high proof cordials. Eventually, I landed on Benedictine. Mm-hmm. Benedictine and I have a very, very strong, passionate relationship that has caused many, many problems and many, many
It's a love-hate relationship.
Oh, my yes.
Well, Brad's been happily married for many years, but his first love, and his wife had to get used to this, was Benedictine.
Love me, love my Benedictine.
That's right. Okay.
But there's something about Benedictine and the flavor profile, and it just speaks to sort of the holiday, just what we're trying to capture with this menu. So it is... I mean, it's simple. It's probably the most simple build that we've gotten. It's overproof rum, lime juice, Benedictine, and a specialty syrup. That's it.
Nice.
It is delicious. It truly is.
I can vouch for that. I had two last night.
Wallop would be a good word for
yes.
that one?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. All right. After we finish up the show, I'm going to have to try one of those. Okay. My lovely wife, Sylvia, who's helping out over here, I think she drank the whole thing by herself, didn't she?
She beat you to it.
Yeah. Smart girl. You love me, love my Benedict. She gets that, Brad. Yeah. Actually, cool. So, let's talk about you guys.
You have an open relationship, you, Benedictine. And
exactly.
Anytime monks are involved, it's a good thing.
Yeah, there you go. Sure. This opens the door. This is why we also like chartreuse.
Chartreuse, all this kind of stuff.
Once you get behind the cathedral doors, there's all kinds of wild stuff going on. You don't know what they do when they're not praying. You know,
no, absolutely. It's a Catholic town here in New Orleans, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Well, you guys, let's talk a little bit about Latitude 29 in the last couple minutes that we have left, just in general, because one of the good things about having Brad on, Jeff, is, you know, I usually play a Neen's role when you're on, and I remind people that not only is it a great bar, but you have good food here, too.
Oh, so you yell at me for not remembering our home address?
Yeah, pretty exactly. You're right. It's a restaurant, too.
Somebody's got to do it.
But great food also, great happy
Truly.
Hour.
Yeah, good happy hour, good food. I mean, bum's bum. Like, everybody knows the dude, and it's all about the drinks. But our food is fantastic. We do a good mix of sort of accessible pub food. We do have a Loco Moco, which, for those that don't know what Loco Moco is, I mean, I never had it before we opened. I think I ate it every day for 2 weeks. We do banh mi's as well.
Yeah.
We've got a steak frites. We do a shrimp and grits, which is, you know, obvious nod to New Orleans cuisine.
But with a miso grits, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, right? Bacon marmalade on that thing.
The short rib, the ribs. I just want to mention the ribs because I'm
the
a fan.
Ribs are fantastic, for wings. Sure. Uh-huh. But it's, it's one of those things that kind of seems to fall by the wayside because, I mean, it's Beach Bum Berry's place.
It's kind of a nice thing, though, right? Maybe, you know, is then people come in for the drinks and then they go, oh, wow, the food's really
they
good.
Don't,
too.
Yeah, they don't realize that the bacon kimchi banh mi.
There
probably
you go.
The only place in the world that you can get a bacon kimchi banh mi, and it's fantastic. Like, our food is outstanding.
Well, Brad, tell people where they can find Latitude 29, both on the street and online and all that good stuff.
So, Latitude 29 New Orleans, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. We're at 320 Decatur Street. We're inside the Bienville House Hotel. Bienville House Hotel is the sort of little sister to the Mont Leon, which is where the Carousel Bar is. And
The Vucaray was invented.
Yeah, where the Vucaray was.
Yes, that's right. Yep. We can on the podcast, we can argue about up or on the rocks. That's an ongoing conversation, right, on the Vucaray.
And catch me, Brad, at latitude29neworleans.com.
Awesome.
Anybody needs to hit me up.
Cool.
Yep.
Thanks, Brad. Yep. Jeff, where do we find all of your wonderful publications and stuff?
Oh, well, just go to beachbumberry.com, and there's a whole bunch of different things, links to choose from, some about the book, some about the syrups that Adam does, of course, one about the restaurant, and how to make, you know, we've got things about how to make a zombie, how to make a Mai Tai, how to make a Navy Grog so you can do it at home. Not that we want you to do that, but, you know, if you're not living in New Orleans, then what else are you going to do?
There you go. One last question, guys. I'm going to close out the radio portion. Sip and Santa runs through when?
Through New Year's Eve, right?
Through New Year's Eve. Okay. Yep. Both Brad and Jeff are going to stick around for another shot with NOLA Drinks, friends. So if you're listening on the radio, go to noladrinks.com. Go get the podcast. But if you are listening on the radio, remember to be kind to one another. Use your turn signal. And until next time, cheers, y'all.
Raise a glass to the bum and cheers to a knee. Drink with them a rum and share a daiquiri. And Santa's here and we're feeling fine down at Latitude 29.
like this. I said, I called your name, but no one came. Now I see you become just like the company you keep. Then he said, all these saints and all these sinners will try to bend your.
All right, everybody, yep, another shot with Noah Drinks. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for sticking around. Hope you are enjoying this conversation here with Brad and Jeff at Latitude 29. We're going to bounce right back over there and continue our convo with them. We're going to talk about the Planner's Punch cocktail. Jeff's going to unpack a lot of history of that drink for us, which is really fascinating, and kind of how it's a touchstone drink in the tiki world. And we also talk about allspice. Yes, that wonderful flavor reminds you of sort of the holidays as well as tiki drinks. Here we go.
All right, everybody, up another shot with Noah Drinks. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for listening in. Friends, as always, we're here at Latitude 29 chatting with Jeff Beachbum Berry and Brad Smith. And thanks again, guys, for having us here.
Thanks for coming. It's always a pleasure.
It's always a lot of fun. Good to you've survived, almost survived the first experience on the show.
Almost.
We're not quite done yet. So
you still got 10 minutes.
Yeah, the tides could still turn here.
There's plenty of time.
So far, so good, man.
Well, it's been a lot of fun, you guys. And we talked a lot about the Sip and Santa program and a really great cocktail program. You know, one thing I didn't ask you guys in the radio portion, can people find out, like, what other bars are participating in the program for all of our out-of-the-area listeners?
Sure. Absolutely, yeah. Sip and Santa, just Google Sip and Santa online, and or Beachbum Berry Sip and Santa. Yeah. And they have the website has a thing for all 27 locations, the one nearest you.
Okay.
You
know? Very cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. And it continues to grow every year, right? More bars kind of sign on. And
so far, so good, man. Yeah.
Do you guys kind of go through a process when do you look at the bars and are these people you have relationships with? Or I'm assuming that you're not just going to have anybody participate, right?
No. The whole thing is, Cocktail Kingdom is very, very selective. And they will go to a bar and they'll check it out and see what the cocktail list looks like and see if they could handle our recipes and not that it's like that, it's not like it's rocket science or anything, but is this a bar that can do cocktails and do them right? Mm-hmm. And is the staff cool and friendly and is it going to be a good vibe and all that? And once they're vetted, then they're invited to participate. And some bars say, well, no, we do just fine during Christmas. We don't need to pay you, you know, the X amount of dollars to be part of this. But other bars go, yeah, that's kind of we can use a bump. So, and this looks cool. So, they participate, and it's like it's a win-win for a lot of bars, like particularly us. Like it just is a really good boost for us in December before the big tourist season kicks in, you know, because mm-hmm. we're in the quarter, we're very dependent on all that, and it gets people, it gets locals into the quarter, you know, right. Which is less and less of a necessity for them now because there's all kinds of great places opening up in all the different, you know, neighborhoods. So you don't have to go into the quarter anymore. Time was, even as short ago as we opened, like five, six years ago, quarter was it if you wanted to go have a good drink mm-hmm. or a good meal. But now, there are places uptown, places in Bywater, places in mid-city. You don't really have to drive into the quarter and try to find a parking spot anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, so something like Sip and Santa is a good boost for us because, like, you know, that'll get people out of there. Out of their neighborhoods.
And it's something different, right? I'm assuming maybe for you guys, Brad, it's kind of fun. I know it's a lot of work to get it off the ground every year, but, you know, just kind of mix things up a little bit.
It is, but it also, like Jeff had mentioned earlier in the radio segment, when we do like a happy hour, we are used to the idea of creating bespoke menus that are only going to last for a certain amount of time. There's ingredients involved with it that aren't part of our normal cocktail list. So the work that goes into it is something that we're intimately familiar with. So mm-hmm. it's, even though it is a lot of work, it's not something that is new to us at all. And I will talk about, I think the way that this has been grown has been so measured and calculated. Like, we could probably sell Sip and Santa to hundreds of bars across the world. Mm-hmm. Like, it really would be no issue whatsoever. But the fact that Cocktail Kingdom does take this approach of making sure that the bars that take this on will do the cocktails justice.
And honor the yep, concept. Okay.
And have the talent and the wherewithal to actually execute it properly. Mm-hmm. I think that that sort of measured approach is fantastic. I mean, you look at their other pop-up, the Miracle on Fifth, and how they have slowly grown that the same way. I think it says a lot. So,
yeah.
You know, we've got 27 this year. Next year,
who put knows? A zero on it.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Right. But it won't grow like crazy. It'll grow exactly the way that it needs to.
Right.
Organic.
Got it. Organic.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And we'll make sure that no matter who takes it on, they can actually do it and do it justice.
And do it justice. Yeah. Cool. Let me ask you guys this. It's kind of a shifting of gears here, fellas. But we took a break from the show last week because of the holiday when people are hearing this. In the previous show, the Planner's Punch came up. And I sort of referred to the drink, this particular show. You can go back and find it yourself. I'm not going to name names. It's public. But thank you, Matt. So I said it was kind of a murky cocktail because I think a lot of things have been called the Planter's Punch, especially way back when, as far as the very specific ingredients that were in it. And I kind of got a little pushback on that because they were trying to talk about the brands that they use in their Planter's Punch. Mm-hmm. I'll leave it like that. What is that drink?
Well, that's a 90-minute seminar I've been giving.
Okay. Yeah.
But
Talk about pushing products, Brad. Yeah. Jeez, man.
Yeah. That's what I've been going around the country talking about for the last couple of years. And the reason why I can do 90 minutes about this one drink is that this is the cocktail. This is the big bang of tiki. Mm-hmm. This is the drink on which every famous tiki drink is based on. That's the template. That's the formula. And it's sweet, sour, strong, and weak. And it's three. It's the first mixed drink. It's like over 300 years old. Starts off in the 17th century, in the mid 1600s, in Southeast Asia, when the British East India Company, and the Dutch East India Company were kind of like, these weren't just corporations; they had their own private armies, basically, and they were strip mining the Malay Archipelago and the Spice Islands of their nutmeg and cinnamon and tea and sugar and all these things that the old world was not privy to. They brought the recipe for punch, which originated in Southeast Asia, back to England and Amsterdam and Lisbon and all the great port cities of Europe. And the punch basically... punch is a corruption of the word paunch, P-A-U-N-C-H, which is also a corruption of the Sanskrit word paunch for five.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And that's the five ingredients to go into punch from the 17th century, which is sugar, water, spirit, spice, and tea. So from this, which used to be served in big 4 or 5 quart punch bowls, and it was a 200-year vogue, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When punch hit Europe... It was 200 years. That's a lot longer than the Cosmo trend. You know, this is actually a huge cocktail trend. Using various things as the spirit, you know, first it was cognac or sometimes gin in Holland. Once rum became big in the 1650s, that became what they used. The spirits varied, the citrus varied, but...
Citrus was kind of introduced later then, right?
Well, from citrus was always a part thing. Of it. If I messed that up on the five, citrus was part of the five.
Okay.
I've been drinking, and it's actually citrus in the drink, too, oddly enough. because this drink, the Christmas Eve of Destruction, is a Planner's Punch variation, as is a zombie, as are all famous.
Right.
Anyway, getting back to the old world, punch was a 200-year vogue. A whole culture grew up around it. And eventually... When the Industrial Revolution happens in the 19th century, punch goes from being a 4 or 5 quart bowl that was drunken leisurely over the course of an evening in little cups to a single serving drink, because this is the age of the cocktail. Punch is sort of a quaint, pokey affair, very time consuming to make and to drink, now that the entire world is becoming mechanized and, you know, coal trains are replacing mule trains and steamships are replacing clipper ships, the world's moving too fast for that. Mm-hmm. And the cocktail comes into vogue. It's a short drink, single-serving drink, quickly made, quickly drunk.
Mm-hmm.
And the Planner's Punch recipe gets reduced down to sweet, sour, strong, and weak in a tall glass.
What is the weak at that point?
The weak is water or ice.
Ice.
By the Industrial Revolution, of course, you have ice. But okay. Traditionally, going back to the 1600s, it was sugar, citrus, spirit, and water.
Right. Okay.
And then, of course, a touch of spice to make it nice, as mm-hmm. the Jamaicans say. So this drink, the Planner's Punch, and the classic example is a half an ounce of lime juice, an ounce of, two tablespoons sugar, an ounce of sugar, one part lime, two parts sugar, three parts strong, which would be a good dark Jamaican punch rum, four mm-hmm. parts weak, which could be water or tea.
Okay.
And then a little bit of nutmeg or apple or Angostura bitters on top, a touch of spice, make it nice.
Yeah.
That very, very simple template was what Don the Beachcomber, who single-handedly created the Tiki drink and the Tiki bar, took in 1934 and turned into what he called rum rhapsodies and what we call Tiki drinks, which are basically all turbocharged Planner's Punches. 33 of the original 70 drinks on his menu, the menu that was copied by hundreds of copycats over the years and created the 40-year Tiki Golden Age from the 1930s to the 70s. They were all based on the Planners. And what he did was he multiplied each line of that poem. So instead of just lime, it would be lime and, well, what if we did lime and grapefruit? Instead of just sugar, it was like, what if we infuse our sugar with cinnamon? And what if we add pomegranate to that? And what if we put falernum on top of that, which is already a compound syrup with a bunch of different things in it? And Don's real genius was in the strong aspect. Like, why just a dark Jamaican punch rum? What if we cut that with a lighter, more floral, drier Puerto Rican rum? The two rums inform each other, create something better in the glass than either one of them, better than some of their parts. Then throw another curveball on that, give it a top note of like an overproof Demerara rum from Guyana, which has a charred wood, smoky, burnt taste, which adds another layer. So what one rum can't give you, basically, three rums maybe can.
And that's a unique thing with tiki, isn't it, Jeff?
Very
that we're
unique.
Talking about
and
having multiple
today,
high-proof spirits.
Yeah. And the same thing with the weak. It's like, instead of water or tea, we'll put a little pineapple in there or, some other, or guava or passion fruit or what have you. And that's basically, so anytime anybody asks you what a tiki drink is a Planner's Punch cubed or squared. It's just like, and every element of that poem, that four-line poem, has been dimensionalized.
Got it.
And Planner's Punch now... to bring back to your original statement, has been corrupted. There's nothing quite as good as a traditional Planner's Punch at a certain time of day in certain weather. Just lime, spirit, sugar, and ice. That's what I make at home now. I don't make zombies at home, but I'll make a Planner's Punch.
Right, right.
And it's the reason why it lasted for 350, going on 400 years. And it's been corrupted from a drink into a drink category.
Okay.
If you order a Planner's Punch in most of the Caribbean now, ironically enough, you're going to get, there's like grenadine, pineapple, pomegranate, all kinds of stuff just randomly thrown in there with whatever syrup, whatever spirit you have. But there's the nice, clean, basic tiki template of those four ingredients is an awesome drink.
That's amazing. Yeah, thank you for sharing that because I think a lot of people expect a Planner's Punch to be like Hawaiian punch and a bunch of
a bright red, sugary, slushy drink. That's simply not the case.
Yeah.
But cast out of the bag. There's not much you can do about it now.
Name's not copyrighted, right? Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you guys one last question, then we're going to let you go because Latitude 29 is open for business. We want to make sure that people get the hospitality they deserve here. Brad, you mentioned allspice, I should say, not dram, being a key ingredient in tiki and something I know I mentioned to Jeff before. This is some years ago when I was at a tiki bar in the Bay Area who shall remain unnamed because they don't give proper credit to drinks. We're going to leave it at that. But that to me was like a touchstone moment for me in my tiki experience because I was tasting a Navy grog.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's that flavor that I had a handful of times going back in San Francisco at Vic's and things like that. That to me is such a key ingredient. What do you think of allspice dram or allspice and... To me, it is like a touchstone kind of thing for tiki in a lot of ways. Not in every drink, but
it kind of goes like to what Jeff was saying about the Planner's Punch, where you have your basic ingredients, but there is a spice element that can be added. And I think with a Navy Grog, it is absolutely essential, because a Navy Grog is, it's one of the driest tiki drinks that's out there. Mm-hmm. Without the allspice, I personally do not find that drink to be remarkable. I think that it is fine, but it's very dry, it's very acidic. But when you add that just that hint of allspice over the top of it, it changes it. It makes it into, it's magic.
Because otherwise it's just boozy, yeah, and citrusy.
Exactly.
Right?
I mean, yeah, that's it. It is a traditional, it's a variation on the planter's punch. Like, mm-hmm. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. But when you add the allspice to that, that takes it to some other level that's just beyond compare.
Even when you dash it in the way you might a bitters, just a little bit, yeah, you know, just like it just transforms the drink.
It's truly.
And sometimes that's all you need. I've been to a lot of bars where they use allspice, like cocktail duct tape, you know, and it's just like they'll just use it to fix anything because that flavor is so great.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. You know, they just like pour it onto everything and, okay, you got a decent drink now. You know, it's the same way that people used to use ginger beer or elderflower liqueur.
Yeah,
know?
Right, right. Exactly.
But I think with our Navy Grog, though, we do dash it in. Yeah. It is very, very carefully measured. Mm-hmm. It's not used as duct tape. It's used as an essential ingredient in that wonderful
cocktail. It can become overwhelming. It's one of those ones that too little doesn't show and too much shows too much,
if,
right?
In the case of our grog, if you don't know what allspice is and you've never had it before, you're not going to know that that's what is making that drink special. But if it's not in the drink, you'd miss it.
That's a good way to put it. And that's actually kind of why I had that sort of moment, is that it came together when the bartender told me what that flavor was in the drink.
Yeah.
And I had no clue. And then they pulled out the bottle. I think it was St. Elizabeth's, I'm guessing.
I think there's a thing about allspice that sort of mimics some of the notes that you pull out of a barrel when you age rum. Mm-hmm. And I think that the spiciness is kind of like there's a char thing to it. There's sort of a burnt wood. You know, right. So when it's used appropriately, it's almost like adding age and characteristic to a rum that wouldn't ordinarily be there.
That's a good way
to put it.
But it
has to be used so gingerly and particularly. Mm-hmm. But when it's done right.
That's a really good way to put it, Brad, because we sort of talk about in those baking spice notes that are on it, when you get that kind of finish, say, on a properly well-made bourbon, that same kind of idea where you get that baking spice note.
There's a way to mimic some of those aged characteristics with things like allspice, or even with the Sipensano, like with nutmeg, or with our ginger amaro. Like, some of those things are just, when they're used appropriately, it just accentuates the spirit and the age of the spirit.
Awesome. You guys, Brad, tell people one more time where they can find Latitude 29 on the street and online.
320 Decatur here in New Orleans. Latitude29NewOrleans.com.
All right. And Jeff, your website for wares and books and such?
Yes, beachbumberry.com. And the restaurant, separate from that, Latitude29NOLA.com.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it.
Of course.
Thank you.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Back at you.
Friends,
right,
a brief musical interlude. I'll be back with my parting shot. All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for listening to the show, friends, this week. I do appreciate it. As always, quick programming note: next week's show, at least as we have it planned at the moment, we will be joined by our resident beer experts, Sal and Matt, coming back to the show once again. I'm sure we'll talk about winter beers, seasonal brews, and several other topics, all things suds related. So be on the lookout for that one. Friends, this is our parting shot. We talked a lot about the Tiki Code, sort of the formula, if you will, that Brad said Jeff cracked, to use his term, in the basic concept of how to build tiki drinks. And we also talked about that sort of famous Caribbean beverage poem, if you want to call it that, that I can never seem to remember if you listen to the interview. But one measure sour, two measures sweet, three measures strong, and four measures weak, plus a dash of spice. And also, as we noted in the conversation, perhaps not the greatest ratio in reality, but somewhat instructive. We talked about the Planter's Punch, of course, how it's a cornerstone drink for the larger cocktail world as well as the tiki world. We talked about how Trader Vic and Don the Beachcomber, playing with that sort of basic tiki formula, and really kind of the basic formula that we were talking about in the Planter's Punch, where they, as Jeff put it, they either squared it or cubed it, if you will, the different parts of the ratio. And that's really where all these tiki drinks come from and how they're built. We talked about how in the tiki world, for example, that when you're
talking about, let's back up here. If we're talking about one measure sour, two measures sweet, three measures strong, and four measures weak, and let's just talk, you know, sour, talking about bitters typically, other things can play that role. Sweet, oftentimes simple syrup, sometimes a sweet liqueur. The three measures strong or strong, we'll just kind of keep the numbers off. Your base spirit, rum, in most cases in the tiki world, and then weak, and that's usually in these days going to be ice or water. So we did talk about sort of the idea of, say split bases, where it's not just one type of rum, how it's very interesting how different types of rum from different regions can complement each other very well in a drink. I'm also reminded one of my favorite drinks, of course, is the Old Fashioned, and one of the things that I'll occasionally ask for is a split base between bourbon and rye. Now, of course, we're certainly talking about whiskeys, but rye whiskey and bourbon are two very different tasting things, and I really enjoy what that does to a drink. Of course, we also have things like, you know, sweet syrups where people play with smoking them and all kinds of interesting different flavors. There's a whole world of liqueurs out there that bring something to the table. But what it really comes down to, friends, is it comes down to balance and taste, in my view. Let's talk about balance. We talk about older drinks, sort of the classics, if you will, the idea of if it ain't broke, don't fix it. If you go back and look at some of the old cocktail books like Jerry Thomas's book from the 19th century, a lot of these things, seem to be these recipes, are basic formulas that are repeated. So really all we're doing, for example, is using the same set of ingredients, but just swapping the base spirit out, for example. So we see these formulas that work, and why they work, they create balance. So we're maybe substituting one thing in for the other, but we're still following the similar pattern. Now, drinks don't need to have a million ingredients to be good. The classics, as I said, are classics for a reason, and the vast majority of the classics are three or four ingredient drinks. Now, here's another way to look at it besides just simply sour, sweet, strong, weak. We can also talk about alcohol, sweet, bitter, and sour. Now, as I kind of noted there at the top, that sometimes these elements can be alcohol or not. So maybe let's talk about the last word cocktail. Okay, it's all one of my favorites. That's gin. So there's your alcohol. Chartreuse, which of course is also alcohol, but brings a lot of bitter. Maraschino liqueur, which is also, of course, alcohol, but that brings your sweet. And lime, which then brings your sour. So you're having things that are alcohol that are strong, representing three of the four categories: alcohol, sweet, bitter, and sour. Now, talk about a variation. One of my favorite variations of the last word is called the final ward, W-A-R-D. I forget the story as to why they call it ward and not word. But basically what's done there is it just swaps in whiskey, preferably bourbon in my case, for the gin, and brings in lemon instead of lime, just because I think lemon tends to play a little better with whiskey or with bourbon in this case. But still using the chartreuse and the maraschino liqueur. It's just, we're taking that same basic formula, swapping in a different base spirit, and just slightly changing the sour, which of course is lemon instead of lime, but we're still getting a very nicely balanced drink. It's built on that successful model. Now, sometimes drinks will just have three. They might have alcohol, sweet, and bitter. The aforementioned Old Fashioned comes to mind that way. There's also maybe the combination of alcohol, sweet, and sour. The daiquiri kind of springs to mind, or the margarita really kind of springs to mind that way. Now, certainly we can talk about other elements or other dimensions to drink, spice or herbal or smoky, a touch of these things, if you will. We might use the term here in Louisiana and New Orleans, lagniappe, which basically kind of means extra, a little bit of bonus if you're not familiar with the term and listening outside the area. To me, when you're talking about building a basic drink, that's kind of adding a dimension, adding an angle, that touch of spice, if you will, that we talked about with that basic Caribbean poem. Now, keep in mind that you certainly can screw something up, though, when you add that bit of lagniappe, if you will, to a drink. We talked about allspice. Brad talked a lot about that, and that one really springs to mind as well, because a bar spoon of allspice dram, if you're using the liqueur, that can go a long, long way in a drink and dominate a drink. If you put in just an eighth of an ounce too much, you could quite easily knock the drink out of whack. Now, acid is another thing that I look for in drinks. I think it can be your friend. Oftentimes, the sour element, so the citrus is what's going to also bring the acid, kind of go hand in hand, and that can cut through the sweetness of things. So that's another element, but that basic sort of concept of sour, sweet, strong, weak, or if we want to say alcohol, sweet, bitter, and sour, and sometimes just three of those, eliminating one of those are basic guidelines and formulas to work from if you're playing around building a drink. Because again, That formula is time tested. It works. So that's kind of an idea of balance. Now, when we step from balance, if we know if we've got that balance right, what tells you that? Well, taste. And frankly, it's what you like, and we all taste differently. I think sometimes we're going to react in a big sense the same if something's way out of whack or out of balance, but we all taste things differently, okay? And again, remember those classics, those basic concepts work as a starting point, but the exact ratios are not necessarily the only thing, and you got to let your own taste be the guide. So what does that mean? Taste a drink if you put it together, and if it's too sweet, well, you use too much of a sweet element in it. So if you use that maraschino liqueur or simple syrup, maybe you back that down. If it's too boozy, knock down the booze from 2 ounces to 1.5 ounces. You can make adjustments. Now, sometimes keep in mind that you sort of pull at the thread of a tapestry there, and just by lowering one thing because it was too boozy or too sweet, you still may have to then tweak the other things. But that's the way to start, is just trust what you're tasting. If it's too this or too that, that's where you start to make an adjustment. And like I was saying, lots of times it's just a simple, a quarter ounce here or there can make a big difference. Now, for example, I mentioned the old fashioned earlier, and I mentioned how I like to ask sometimes for a split base between bourbon and rye. One of the things that tends to happen is a lot of people make it too sweet for my taste. So I tend to ask for it a bit less sweet, and I'll ask in a very polite way, how much simple syrup do you put in an old fashioned? And sometimes I'll ask them to back it down 1/8 of an ounce or so for me, because I like that booze just to pop just a little bit more. But that's me, and I know that. Why I mention this is that if you find a preference, remember it. Jot it down. All kinds of those different apps out there on your phone to take notes. Make a note of it, because what this does is this helps you at home or at the bar. Bartenders, at least most of the time, really like to make a drink for you according to your spec, if you know what your spec is. Now, certainly there are some cocktail heroes out there that have an arrogant attitude. If you want to mess with the formula, if you will, the recipe of their drink, they might resent it. But that's very, very rare. All the good bartenders out there in this world, it's a cornerstone of hospitality. If you know what you like, know what you like, and ask for it. Now, why I say try and remember it or jot it down is because that can help you replicate the experience. You know the why, and you know the how. So you can remember that. And then when you go in, like in my case, using the old fashioned, I know what I like. So that's why when I ask that question, how much simple do you put in? I'll ask or give them my preference. So I think it's a great way to go about continuing to experience what it is that you like once you've discovered what it is. If you don't really remember it or jot it down or file it away in the back of brain, if you will, then you're not going to be able to do that. And every time is going to be sort of a bit of a roller coaster ride, and you're not going to get exactly what you want. Now, I will say this, you need to be sure to temper things. Allow experts when they got new things on their cocktail menu to show you new ideas and new flavors. So I'm always open-minded to things. I always want to taste different things. So I'm not so hard and set in my ways that I'm not interested in tasting something new. So I always encourage people to keep that in mind too. Also, don't order stuff just because it sounds cool. All right, know why you like it. Be able to articulate to yourself or to the bartender, whomever, why it is that you like it the way it is. And again, that allows you to replicate the experience in the future. So that's really kind of how taste plays into this. So really, friends, if you're going out into the cocktail world or if you're making drinks at home, if it is balance that you seek, let taste be your guide. Friends, that's our parting shot. Here's to you.